Welcome to the Injured to Elite podcast with your host, Dr. David Meyer, sports physical therapist and mental performance coach. Dr. Dave is a former Major League Baseball rehab coordinator and has now integrated the mental side into physical rehabilitation. This podcast shares the many stories and strategies of those who have taken themselves from injured to elite. Head over to www.injuredtoelite.com to learn more about David and his recently published book, Injured to Elite.
Hey everybody, Dave back here with episode number 60 of the Injured to Elite podcast. In this episode, I interview a very special man and a very special guest, George Terrace, who actually officially today, Monday, May 10th, 2021, started his first day of physical therapy school, getting his doctorate in physical therapy currently. A common question a lot of us get in the field is, what made us get into it? That's one of the themes of this episode. What inspired George to go on his journey of becoming a physical therapist? And this episode in particular, before I tell you the specifics of the topic, is really difficult for me to put into words the theme, because it's about life, it's about life and death, it's about perseverance, it's about sports and baseball and physical therapy and so much. And as a content creator, a lot of times we want to go in every direction and we just want to put it all out there. So that's definitely a challenge for me on this one, because there is no other way for me to prepare you for this one other than sit back and listen with an open mind, and you are going to be given a gift that George was given through a very serious diagnosis of Ewing's sarcoma, a form of cancer, which ultimately something that led to a condition called drop foot for George, where he was unable to dorsiflex his ankle or bring his toes upward or his ankle upward. But as he says it and he describes it, he actually gained something from this. He really connected with my work being on the mental side. And when I asked him to come onto the show, he was more than happy to do so, which is why this episode is 2 hours long. We went on YouTube Live. We had people join to listen in live on YouTube and Instagram, a lot of George's family, including his mother, which you'll hear about, which says a lot. This episode is mainly unedited. It's pretty raw, not from a cursing perspective, but an emotional perspective. George is actually a part of the Injured to Elite network and community that I've built, where we're helping each other go from injured to elite as both practitioners and professionals, and also helping each other take our clients, our athletes, those we work with, from injured to elite. It's a multidiscipline community, from athletes to physical therapists, chiropractors, mental performance coaches, and beyond. So if you want to hear more about that, head over to www.injuredtoelite.com/network. So try and put yourself in a frame of mind of not seeing just the cancer word and hearing the cancer word and already thinking negatively, because ultimately you're going to be able to take something really special from this, from George. And George took almost from cancer in a positive light, in a new framed way. And I don't want to belittle what people go through with cancer, because people lose loved ones all the time from cancer. I lost my father to cancer. He was chronically ill with kidney disease before that, but ultimately it was cancer that took his life. Before I go into it, the point I'm making is most of us won't be going through what George went through with Ewing's sarcoma. It's quite rare. Cancer in and of itself still won't affect most of you out there directly. But when it comes to a life and death situation, and really a situation that forces the best out of you, especially for those that already have a lot of great inside of them, like George, it really highlights the different things that you can take in all other avenues of your life and transform those domains, just like George has done, is doing today, his first day of PT school, now inspired to help others and perpetuate that. So when you listen to this, put it into the context of your life, whatever your challenge is. It doesn't have to be just medically oriented. Think of it in the greater scheme of he's living on to tell this story, which is so miraculous. It is emotional. I was at times quite emotional hearing him speak and seeing him get a little emotional at times. I'm not trying to tell you all just to think positively, but if you are somebody out there that has a lot of worry or anxiety around your health, be mindful about that, bring some awareness into that without letting that derail you from all of the great that you're about to take in during this episode. Without further ado, George Terrace. Everybody, to the Injured to Lead podcast here, we have a very special guest, George Terrace, who is going to share his remarkable journey going from injured to elite on so many levels. I don't know if we have enough time today to go through the entire journey, but we are going to hit it hard. I'm so honored to have you, George. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, David. I'm excited to be on here. I've read your book, and I'm so excited to be part of your community, Injured to Elite.
It's funny, through COVID, meeting a lot of people virtually, it's one of those things where you don't really remember always how you met somebody, and you kind of fall into that. You just popped up there on Instagram one day somewhere, and I just knew that I needed to connect with you because I read a little bit about your journey going into PT school and a baseball lover. And then I saw in your profile your experience with Ewing sarcoma, which hit me near and dear because I have worked with players in the past that had a similar diagnosis, which I didn't really have a lot of experience working with as a physical therapist, oddly enough, before working in professional baseball. And so I saw it actually in baseball. Cancer is something that we see in sports, just like we see outside of sports. George, I want to give you the microphone and the opportunity to tell people about your story.
Thank you for that introduction, David. So where I'm at right now is I am recently graduated from Cal State San Marcos University here in San Diego. I graduated in December with a kinesiology degree, pre-physical therapy. And through that, I actually led into PT school at the University of St. Augustine in San Marcos. And I'm starting in a few weeks, actually, this coming May. But what got me there was an experience I never thought I would have. I was 12, 13 years old when I was diagnosed with a rare bone cancer called Ewing sarcoma. With Ewing sarcoma, it introduced me to the world of not just cancer, but rehabilitation, healing, and so many aspects of the hospital that had inspired me to be where I am today. So having cancer, I had to go through chemotherapy. I had 8 sessions of chemotherapy, limb salvage surgery, with this bone tumor that was found at the head of my left fibula, so right below the knee on the lateral side, on the outside. I had bilateral metastasis in both of my lungs through the Ewing sarcoma. And through this, I introduced to cancer, chemotherapy, limb salvage surgery, but also something that was unique in my story was a stem cell transplant, autologous stem cell transplant that replaced radiation, which really was a crucial part of my therapy. And I believe that it really did make an impact on why I'm standing here today. But you know, I think everything happened for a reason. I think this cancer has introduced me to the world of rehabilitation. And I feel in some ways that I don't think I'd be where I'm at today, having the passion for physical therapy that I have today without cancer. It opened so many doors for me. And yeah, no, that's a little bit about myself. And I'm a huge baseball lover. As David mentioned before, I am a San Diego Padres fan. I'm so happy we're doing pretty well this season.
Thank you for sharing that, George. And I know a few players that are playing there in San Diego, Tommy Pham, and I worked together a little bit when he was with the Cardinals.
That's right.
I don't know if Tommy is he with the Padres this year again?
He is.
Well, the story that you're telling us about, there's so many parallels to the podcast because, of course, I talk a lot about the mental side of rehabilitation, which I think is so missed, and we're so early in adapting this. And I know you and I, we quickly bonded over that, your own implementation of it without formal training with it. Before we go into the mental side and share with the listeners about that, let's just give people a little background on Ewing sarcoma.
So Ewing sarcoma is a bone tumor that is found in the bone or even soft tissue. And sarcoma is actually one of many cancers that is found in the soft tissue or in the bone. It is one of the rare ones. The the more common that you may hear of is osteosarcoma, or you may hear of synovial sarcoma as well. A good friend of mine actually, unfortunately, lost his father due to synovial sarcoma this February 4th of this year, World Cancer Day. And it inspired me how he was a baseball lover as well. Nick Javier was his name. And I saw him with an amputated leg go out there. So I played on the club baseball team at Cal State San Marcos. And I was there for 4 years, president for 4 years of the club. And it really inspired me when a player named Hagan Javier came up to me, and he played for our club for a little bit. And he told me his father was diagnosed with synovial sarcoma, which broke my heart. And through that, they live up in Sacramento, so up north, Northern California. And he came down for some of Hagan's practices and games. And I'll never forget when he went on that practice field and actually started throwing with his son. It just showed me that, you know, it's a really tough diagnosis, but you have to have the mentality and the strength to continue doing what you love to do. But yeah, sarcomas.
This was after your own experience?
Correct. So I was diagnosed in 2012.
How old were you?
I was 13, January of 2012, 2 weeks before my 14th birthday, actually. And here I am almost 10 years later. It's going to be 9 years. Next year, it's going to be 10 years. It's wild to me to think how much you are exposed to the world of cancer, and even through your father, David. You hear stories, right? And you're exposed, and you have this empathy, this sympathy for others that go through this experience too, because we're not alone, right, in this journey. There's a lot of people that help us and a lot of people that guide us through that mental aspect of this physical trauma in a way.
You say something interesting there, that we're not alone in this. And I know you and I, speaking about your experience, you shared a lot about your own family and the support you had. I want to start by, let's fill everybody in, because I think it's an uncomfortable topic. I think things like talking about cancer, talking about death, talking about changes in identity of any type, these are really uncomfortable things as humans, and things that, George, you have really faced very directly. And my own clinical experience with osteosarcoma, there's no good cancer, but this is like the bad cancer, like the cancers that can be very problematic. And in your circumstance, you did have a metastasis, which was very advanced cancer in your lungs. And I want to learn about the clinical side and how the stem cells were used therapeutically. I really want people to get a sense of the because you described it to me as pre-cancer and post-cancer.
Correct. I in a way think of my life so far, in my 23 years I've had so far, that I have life before cancer, and then I have a life after cancer. And I look at myself with the same passions and loves of baseball, family, my Greek culture, the people around me, that all stayed the same. But also, I have learned to become this person that I never thought I would become without cancer. So there's a lot of change that has happened through cancer, not just physically, but mentally. As you say, we emphasize that mental part of growing, right? Rehabilitation. It's huge. It's huge within a situation like this. And I would say I went through it, right? Physically on my own. It's my body that had the cancer, but also I believe my family and the people around me that have changed through this as well, because they had a perspective of possibly losing somebody that they never thought they would have, especially at such a young age of being 13, 14, having this cancer. So it was a scary thing. And, you know, it's one of those things that, in a weird way, I know I'm talking about two different lives. In a weird way, I'm very thankful for this opportunity and situation of having cancer. And I know it always doesn't end up the way I have it, being on the other side of things with cancer. But I think I have a mission now, being a cancer survivor. And actually, it introduced me to the world of rehabilitation, which I'm very thankful for as well, in physical therapy.
George, I think for a lot of our listeners that might have had an indirect experience with cancer, I think it's unfathomable for a lot of human beings to imagine having the ability to be positive when you're given the circumstances that you were handed. Walk us through, for dummies, right? The yellow and black book, the, you know, cancer for dummies, mentally going through that. How do you persist in your optimism, and how do you find this growth or this freaking growth opportunity, as they call an FGO? How did you do it?
You know, I was young, right? But I was also growing throughout that time. And what I mean by that is I was going through a period of my life where I was becoming a teenager, right? Going through all these changes physically. And, you know, I think I was surrounded by the right people and the right environment to allow me to get through this. Because some people, they don't have the support system going through this cancer. I was very fortunate to have this support system. And the people around me actually, it created a distraction, actually, throughout going through therapy. Chemotherapy, it I'm not going to lie, it sucks, right? You feel weak, fatigued, and you just don't feel like yourself, right? And you obviously have the symptoms of hair loss, throwing up. But that all went out the window when I was just thinking about, okay, I have one goal here. It's to survive and get back to what I love to do. And I think it's one of the hardest things to adapt to something. It's really hard to adapt when you lose something you love. So I wanted to get back to the life that I knew, you know, and I think it actually didn't give me the life I knew. It gave me even more, you know, perspective on life. And, you know, part of me thinks it's, yeah, you know, I felt trust in my doctors as well, too. That mental side really kept me going, because if you have trust in your doctors, you're not on edge on what's going to happen next. I had trust in my doctors that they were going to provide me the protocol and the path to allow me to succeed and beat this cancer. So there's a lot of trust factors with my family, the doctors around me, my physical therapist too. I had physical therapist in inpatient settings, outpatient settings, and strength and conditioning after that to get me to play baseball. And I actually have, I'm going to grab something very quick.
Please.
I have a condition called drop foot due to this cancer, because the tumor is wrapped around a nerve called the common peroneal nerve, which allows for dorsiflexion, which is the lifting of your ankle pretty much. And what I wear on the daily is an AFO, ankle foot orthosis. And what this provides me is dorsiflexion when I walk. So it provides me more of a normal gait. And when I run and do the activities I love to do, I have this with me to help me get to where I need to be. And that's another aspect of why I'm doing the things I love to do. My orthotist has been such a huge impact on me. We went through about 10 AFOs. Some broke, some didn't fit me well. And I finally found this AFO that I have now that allows me to run. It allows me to play baseball, allows me to play the sports and do the things I love to do. So it's all about perspective. And, you know, I'm flustering my words right now, but it is about perspective and how you are distracted by the people around you, I think, in a way. And distracted, what I mean by distracted, it's not a bad thing to be distracted. I think it keeps your mind off the bad and puts your mind on the good when you're distracted by things like that with family and friends.
Yeah. Tell me, with the distract, what was the mentality that they brought in terms of how, what did you feel at 13 years old, 14 years old, projected onto you with their demeanor? What did you sense?
So whenever somebody visited me in the hospital or even at my house when I was recovering from a chemotherapy session, I remember that everybody would be positive. And I know that's a general term, but if you come in with some fear into somebody's life that is on the line, it puts the person that is affected on edge in a way that it doesn't give them hope. So I would say that everybody that came in, they brought in board games, they would tell stories, right? And those are all distractions, right? And that's part of the mental aspect. I know it's like if you bring in a negative vibe, patient, the person's going to have a negative reaction to it, right? But if you bring in positivity, the patient will have a positive experience. And that can, not just for the world of oncology, but anywhere, right? Rehabilitation, if the physical therapist has a positive outlook on your situation, then the patient will have a positive, they will have optimism about their situation that they can rehab, right? And I think, you know, that's what it was. I think everybody that came into my house or even the hospital had something positive to bring into my experience.
What about that self-talk? So you're given a diagnosis of the cancer. How was it explained to you at 13 or 14?
You know, I'll never forget when I was diagnosed. I actually had pain in my, on the lateral side of my knee for maybe half a year. It was growing heat, it was tender. And I'll never forget when my mom finally drove me to get an x-ray, and they actually diagnosed me with a hairline fracture at the head of my fibula, and I was sent home with crutches and a boot. Something was still wrong. They took blood. A few days later, they tell me that this is not good, that I should go to the ER at Rady's Children's Hospital in San Diego. And I went to the ER, I believe this was late at night. And when I showed up, I was induced with fear. For the doctors to tell me that there's something wrong, I had no idea. And to be honest, as a 13-year-old, you know what cancer is by hearing it around, but you don't really know what cancer is until it's put right into your face, right? And they took me in for a biopsy that night. I woke up the next morning in a hospital bed, and I'll never forget that my surgeon, orthopedic surgeon, took my parents out into the hallway and explained to them pretty much what it was. And they came back into my room crying. I started crying, just reacting to the negative, not negative, to them crying. I started to cry because they were crying. And I didn't know what was going on, but my mom told me that I have cancer, and that I would have to go through chemotherapy. And from there, in January, the mindset was different in the beginning. I always questioned, why me, why me, why me? And I think that's a totally normal reaction that people would have to any diagnosis, whether it's a broken ankle or even something severe like cancer. It's life-changing. It alters your situation that you have in life. And I think over time, I started to learn, okay, not why me. I had opportunity to continue a path of chemotherapy, surgery, and fortunately a stem cell transplant that would allow me to survive. So I had to turn on a switch and anchor down, as you said in your book, find that anchor to allow me to succeed and beat this cancer. So there's a lot of confusion at first, which I think is very common for any situation like that. And then I started to develop this identity that, okay, this is what I have. I accepted what I had and I moved forward. So that was a big part of trying to get through it, right? The mentality, if I kept saying, why me, the whole year of treatment, I don't know where I would be.
But George, you didn't read a book. You didn't have necessarily, it sounds like, a sports psychologist, because you saw yourself as an athlete, I know.
Yeah.
And that kind of comes to the initial question I asked you with the self-talk of going through acceptance of an ankle sprain can be life-altering for somebody. Accepting a potentially terminal diagnosis, accepting that, I could imagine being a lot more difficult than accepting an ankle sprain. Yet you did this without a curriculum. You did this without the specific type of coaching and guidance. And it sounds to me like it was certainly a combination of those around you. I'm fascinated by, within you, at 13?
Yeah, you know, I will say that I have three siblings, my older brother, two younger sisters, and they were really strong for being the ages that they were to react to what I had as well. And I know you're talking about self-talk, but I'm trying to create a bigger picture and then dial please. Down again.
No, please don't go in that direction, please.
So my mom is a really strong-willed person, and this was really hard for her to take as well. But seeing how my mom reacted and then how she snapped out of her pain and sorrow and started almost guiding me mentally to say, okay, this is our game plan. We're going to get through this this way, this way, this way, day by day, not creating too much commotion, I guess, within the treatment plan. But
what does that mean?
What I mean by she didn't make it confusing for me. She said, okay, we're going to take it day by day. I remember going in for my chemotherapy sessions Thursday through Sunday, and she would talk me through everything. It was something that allowed me again to be distracted, right? And then when I was rarely by myself. And what I mean by that is when you're by yourself, you can get swallowed up in your own thoughts, and you can store really well, which I did a lot of during treatment, or you can get in that depressed state where you are, why me, why me, why me? But my mom was there to always be my soundboard. As I would talk through things, she would accompany me well. And I think she was my rock, and my siblings as well. They were also there for me. And we all had our own relationships within my treatment. And I can say that for all my friends, my cousins, uncle, aunt, grandparents, they all brought something that made me think the way I did during treatment. So that's what I mean by, I know that self pep talk you're talking about, but I think it's all influenced by the people who I was surrounded with. And so And that's how I developed my own identity through going and beating this cancer is really by having a support system and just knowing that it's not just I'm doing it for myself, but I'm also doing it for the people around me to beat this cancer.
Wow. What I was going to ask you was before cancer, pre-cancer, as you call it, mm-hmm. a ball player, it seems like you had a really good relationship with your family, with your parents, your mother, and you had a trust with them in your life. What helped to develop that? So when you were in the position of cancer, you were able to kind of tap in and trust the support team around you. What was the framework just healthy wise? What was your framework of having a trusting team and family there? What was the recipe there?
You know, I'm going to use my uncle for an example in this situation. When my mom took me to the ER at Rady's Children's Hospital, I was in the ER from 7 o'clock at night to, I remember being up till 12, 1 o'clock in that ER bed. And, they took me in for a biopsy early that morning. But what I'm trying to get at with the story is that my uncle got there within seconds of hearing that I was heading to the ER, and he was there for me along with my mom. And what I'm using my uncle as someone that exemplifies someone that would be there for me on instant. And my support system was very attentive towards what I was going through. No matter what it was, right? It was going to be bone cancer or it's going to be a bacterial infection. That's what they told me initially after the hairline fracture. And he said, regardless of what it is, we're here for you. We're going to get through this together. My uncle, he's really busy with his career and life. And for him to take the time to rush over to the hospital, drop what he's doing, that's what a lot of the people around me did as well, right? They dropped what they're doing to be that support system for me. So that's what I saw in my family. That's what I saw in my friends and the community around me too. With they would actually do fundraisers and have community events for the slogan that I had, Live Strong, Be Strong, George Strong, which was really cool for me to have that mentality going in, right? I still wear these bracelets on my wrist. For those that are of you that are listening, may not be able to see it, but I'll describe it for those of you that are viewing. Yeah. So I have a Live Strong bracelet, one of the original Live Strong bracelets, but I also have a Live Strong, Be Strong, and George Strong bracelet.
Yeah, put it that I have. I could see.
Yeah, yeah. And I've been wearing this for 10 years now, and it's also symbolic to me to have something like this on my wrist every single day as I go through the things that I do every day. You know, the only time I've had to take it off was through surgery. And then, David, as you know, being a baseball player, when you pitch, can't have anything on that wrist. So I had to throw that in my back pocket. But it's always been attached to me somehow. So that this is very symbolic, and I look down on it every single day and just find strength through it. Because it reminds me of every situation I've been through.
Yeah. And it's amazing to see at that age that it had a positive effect on your development. And I think kind of talking to you now, because I've spoken to you about a lot of this before, but I'm getting more of the story. I think a message for a lot of the listeners that don't have osteosarcoma or Ewing's sarcoma or cancer at all, because at the end of the day, most people do not have cancer, right? However, it's so interesting how seeing someone's journey through an ultimate challenge like cancer, especially the type that you had that went to your lungs and put you through the ringer of surgeries and stem cell transplant. We'll talk about that. Mm-hmm. It sounds like the first 13 years of your life were pretty remarkable in and of themselves. And I know you haven't shared much there. There's an element of receptiveness that it seems like you have, like a trust. And in my world, when people come to me physically hurt, they bring all that baggage with them. And then they come to the physical therapist, they come to the physician, they come to themselves for the first time and they say, all right, I got to put my game face on. And it could be a real struggle versus you got the Medal of Honor of cancer. Really? You got the Medal of Honor of cancer. You survived, but that's not the Medal of Honor, I don't think, because you're thriving. And we'll get to that as we towards the end, because I want to spend our time here. You're thriving, right? You're going to physical therapy. You're getting your doctorate just starting in a few weeks.
Yep.
Which is amazing.
Thank you.
But I think the point I'm making is the time to develop that framework is always right now. Not to scare people that cancer is coming, because for most people, cancer is not coming. For most people, cancer will not kill you. Cancer will not affect you. For most people, maybe indirectly, it'll probably affect everybody in some way, shape, or form. But the things that you'd say you grew with these things, right? Changing the narrative of the fear. And it's really almost fear mongering, even around things like cancer, like that it's terrorizing people. Mm-hmm. And sure, we talk about the stories, but like in this situation, having a framework to be able to handle the worst of circumstances, what would you tell little George? You're doing these things really good on your report card, and I want you to keep doing them.
You know, I grew up, I grew up always being that kid that people would say, oh, George is always smiling. George is always smiling. And I would always be laughing. And what I'm trying to say with that is that there's always, I feel like, something positive that was around me. There's not much to fear around in my life. very few things that I can say that actually were detriment in my development. But I think the positive mindset and the people around me, I'm emphasizing the people around me, because I don't think without the right support system and the people around me that I would have the mindset I do today. Because it is very easy to sink in quicksand, right? If you have the wrong mindset, it can unravel on you very quickly. So I think continuing that positive mindset, almost like I think I described to you yesterday, like getting to the next batter in a lineup for baseball, right? You know, you just want to keep that positive mojo going, right? Get to the next batter. You know, not everything's about you. It's about how you can affect the people around you, right? And that's your team, 1 through 9.
Right. I think there's been a big, in the personal development world over the last decade, there's been like a bashing of positive thinking. Well, it's not positive thinking. I have the recipe. I'm going to hack it for you. And you hear people like Tony Robbins and other people talk about it. No, it's not positive thinking. Well, here we have somebody that has the Medal of Honor from going through the ultimate physical crisis challenge, all of it. And you have the living proof. We call it N=1, the case study that in fact, it was effective for you. What I want to go into though, specifically here with your family, those around you, with their positivity, I don't think we all take it or the responsibility enough seriously of how we affect the little ones around us, our kids. I don't have kids, but the younger, the students I mentor, a lot of them are younger than me, early career professionals, the mentality that I bring around them is going to have an effect on them. It's a responsibility we have socially. What were those qualities you saw in mom, in dad, in uncle, in siblings? What I wanted to see it. I want to feel it.
You know, they cared for whatever you were saying or whatever you wanted to do, no matter what the circumstances were. And I know that's very brief, but sometimes you can't unconditional. Sometimes you can't explain love. And there's a word in Greek called philotimo, which means just unexplainable love. It's pretty much unconditional love, right? And sometimes you can't even explain the word. It's so unexplainable. But sometimes it's not by word that you know that they love you. It's almost by visual. And like you just said, right? You feel it, right? So there's this aura around a loving family. And the mind is such a strong thing. It's such an impactful thing. Your mind can tell you whether something is good or something is bad. And you just feel this love from my family that we still meet up. I know with COVID, it hasn't been so frequent, but we still have family get-togethers with my cousins, uncles, aunt, grandparents. Almost every Sunday, not with COVID, it's been kind of split up a little bit more, but that's how it would be before, right? I knew Sunday was my family day. Sunday was family day. I never hung out with friends or anything usually on those days, so it would be saved for family. So, you know, that's all I can say. It's unexplainable love.
You felt it. And then for those out there, I know I'm putting you on the spot here, but you took a response. You told me your mission, which I love, that you are now going to take what you received from your experience and you're going to help change this whole entire paradigm in the field of sports, physical therapy, outside of that, in the cancer world, and really help inspire others and motivate others and do this whole thing. So connecting the dots here for those that they might not feel that unconditional love, that's a problem, because when they're not able to feel what you felt, being able to trust the optimism of those around them to get through their form of cancer, meaning doesn't have to be cancer. It could be it could be anything in their life that's a challenge. It's really, really challenging. Is there any thoughts that come to mind where those in those circumstances can somehow find self-love or put the love out there. I'm shooting in the dark a little bit because we don't have concrete answers here, but what comes to mind for you?
You know, when someone feels alone and they don't have that support system, I would say there's always somebody out there. And I know that's very vague, but there's somebody out there that can relate to you. There's somebody out there that's going through the same thing that you are going through. And it's hard to fathom how many people there are in this world, right? It's crazy to think, oh, I only have this bubble, this group of people that I know, but there's so much out there. That now with technology, there's resources, right? You don't, like you and me, David, we haven't physically met in person, but we made this connection through the internet, right? And it is really taken to our advantage in that way to connect with people. And I think that's where people, they shouldn't feel alone. Even though we all at times where we do feel alone, right? That's where we get stressed out. And then we take a long, deep breath, right? And realize that there are people out there to be our support team. They may not be in our radius around us, right? In that city that we're in, but there's people out there that you can connect with. And it's one of those things that you as a person, you will go through these ups and downs and you'll be like, you don't feel loved. You feel that sometimes, right? And you don't feel like you have that support system, but then you open up your eyes and realize there's options out there to have, you know, that support system there's people going through very similar situations, but not the direct identical situation because you are what you make of your situation. I know there's people that had, you know, same cancer as me, but we all took it differently. Right. We all took it differently, but we all approached it differently. Positive, right? We took it positive, but we also approached it differently. So what I'm trying to get at here is that everybody has a different story, but we can all come together in a fellowship, in a community, and network, right? Ninja to Elite.
Yeah. What comes to my mind as you're speaking about that and something I've embodied is putting Ryan Sheriff and I talk about this a lot is putting the love out there when you don't feel like you have it actually. And amazing book, Believe It, by the owner and the founder of It Cosmetics. She talks about putting out what it is you want to receive. And it's interesting how that happens. I mean, we had a little situation, my fiance Olya and I, where we were at dinner a week ago and we told the bartender waiter was like, we told him, hey, you know, you hustle so hard. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how you do it. And we just truly meant it. We weren't expecting anything. And then my favorite free dessert comes to the table that evening. And I wasn't expecting it. Uh-huh. And it's this simplicity of, for those that might not be as blessed maybe with as much unconditional love around them, and they feel like maybe they're in darkness. Do you feel like somehow trusting yourself to put yourself out there and put that out in the world can help maybe others receive it? I don't mean to lead you, but I'm genuinely curious, like how you feel about that.
Yeah, no. Sometimes you have to be heard. Sometimes you have to be heard because there's so many people out there, right? That you can get lost in the silence, I guess. But if you put yourself out there, somebody will hear your voice and then that will create a chain reaction. And somebody else will be like, hey, I have a friend who does this, this, and that. Would you like to be part of it? And that's how communities, fellowships are made, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to go back to Injured to Elite. I don't think I would have known without your message. So you're spreading the word well. Right. To people that Injured to Lead is something that I never thought I needed because I didn't know it existed. So now that I know it existed, right, there's a platform there that you can share with the world. And that's what people can start doing. If they feel lost, they go from their time zero, as you describe in your book, and layer it, start layering it and start making a community and fellowship out of it. You know, it's, and I continue to use those words, community and fellowship, because
yeah,
it's similarities all with different stories come together, right? You have similarities, but you're all come from different backgrounds, right? You're on the East Coast. I'm on the West Coast. Look at us now. We're in this community, Injured to Elite, and we're on the podcast together.
I love it. And it sounds to me like a big piece that connects is not isolating yourself and embracing it, because something that happened when I worked for the Cardinals, players came to Jupiter in the rehab group and they were isolated away from their teammates. They were on their form of a cancer ward, which was the rehab group. Mm-hmm. And it was really important for us not to feel burnt out and get burnt out, because they were bringing in their feelings. And to your point, if I was in fear and nervous and anxious, the players would feel that, my tension. And so you're right. This interplay of how our outlook and our energy plays off of each other and helps ultimately the healing process, we cannot say enough about. So I think the fact that we've spent so much time talking about that today is so important. Don't isolate. And embrace other humans and put your guard down. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And actually that reminds me of a story. So I'm a rehabilitation aide at a outpatient physical therapy clinic called G3 Physical Therapy and Wellness Center. And throughout that clinic, I've learned so much about shadowing and watching these physical therapists around me, and even the surrounding aides around me that I've learned so much about. And actually, on top of that, the patients you learn so much about, right? Not just about their stories, but their physical limitations, right? And how we can improve that. But what I'm trying to get at here is, I am someone that speaks to patients when going through exercises. I say, all right, we are going to do a lunge. We are going to do a squat. And the patient that actually brought that to my attention and said, I like how you say we. It makes me feel like that I'm not in this alone, that we have a sense of togetherness. And I said, you know, I tend to do that a lot, but I never noticed it. Thank you for bringing that to my attention.
George, that's really incredible that you just brought that up, because I, over the last week or two, I finally started calling myself, I actually called myself out for it. Mm. And I started saying to myself, you know, why am I always saying we're going to do this together? We're going to do this together, because with my clients and I think my unconscious intention there was exactly what you said. Like, I wanted them to feel as though we were connected and we had this alliance. But then at the same time, I was intellectually thinking, well, now I'm kind of taking the onus off of them and putting it on me. And then I was like, is that bad? And that's an example of getting too into your head with something. And hearing you talk about that is so interesting, because, and I think what you described makes it even more poignant to me, what I'm trying to say when I say we. I'm trying to express empathy and show to them that I'm experiencing to some degree, not at the same level, what they're going through. Mm-hmm. Anybody that knows anything about the psychology of working with people, if you're not empathizing, then you're just operating or trying to fix, and nothing gets done well there. So that's beautiful. Shifting gears pretty abruptly, tell me a little bit about the stem cells, because I think it's important people understand having a metastasis of this form of cancer to the lungs is usually deadly, right?
Yeah, it doesn't always have the outcome that I had. I know this is going to be a weird, different phrase that you may hear, but they actually call me around the oncology clinic unicorn, that I stick out with my situation. What they mean by that is, usually my situation doesn't have the outcome that it did. I'm going to share a story that it's actually sometimes really hard for me to bring up, but I had a friend of mine, her name was Amanda, with, I'm not kidding, the same exact situation as mine, but with osteosarcoma. So bone cancer at the left head of the fibula, with metastasis. And she made it through the first time. And then the second time, around. She was diagnosed, relapsed, and it started metastasizing throughout her body. And it's one of those things that I look at, I almost get a, I'm sure people can relate on this on different levels, but a survivor's guilt in a weird way. It's very odd for me to explain into words, because I'm very thankful that I'm here, but there's a survivor's guilt, you know? And it's one of those things that we went through it together, actually, in 2012. And we both made it on the other side. And then she relapsed a few years later. And it's just one of those things that it just breaks my heart to hear those perspectives. And I know the outcome's not always the same as mine. But I actually forgot where I was going with this. But it's one of those situations that it's just really hard to think that way, you know, about someone that was really close to us and then didn't make it along with you, right? Community. We didn't make it together on the other side. I don't want to go on a tangent there, but it's just one of those things I think about her all the time. And she had an AFO too. She was strong-willed. She was going to go on her mission with helping the world of cancer with diets, right? She wanted to be, I think she wanted to go through a nutritionist, and which is a huge part, another aspect of healing, right? And biology. So that's where, not true. I actually forgot what the question was, to be honest, through that, but
I don't think the question matters anymore.
Yeah.
But I wrote down the word guilt as you were starting to explain some of that. And speaking to you before this official podcast we're doing, conversation really, and thank you for going so deep, and you're so authentic, and I feel it. And I think that's what I think we should tell people. I think the first time we had a conversation, I was crying. literally the first time I was talking to you. And I want to ask you, and I apologize in advance if I go deeper than you wanted, but what would Amanda be thinking and telling you right now, 2 weeks before starting a physical therapy program?
She would just say, go do what you were supposed to do. You know, she was very optimistic. She always like supported whatever you thought. And I'll never forget like seeing her when I first started running again, that she was a runner actually at Rancho Bernardo, which is a local high school in the area of San Diego. And I'll never forget seeing her throughout the neighborhood, and even actually one time on the coast of the 101. And she was always so supportive, like, rock on, George, you got it. And like so supportive that I was starting to run again with my AFO. And she had an AFO as well. And it's just something, you know, she always had your back, I feel like. And I only knew her. It's kind of weird. We didn't have many interactions outside of cancer, outside of Rady Children's Hospital. I would say that our interactions came almost through, yes, we had interactions physically in cancer, but almost through, we were going through the same things. We had that fellowship. I know I keep bringing that up, of similarities that we felt that we can express to each other. We would FaceTime each other from two different hospital beds within the hospital. She'd be on the maybe east side of the hospital floor. I'd be on the west side, just those kind of things. And we would FaceTime and talk about things. And I just remember she was so significant through a few interactions. It was really something that I appreciated, her positivity. And she was older than me too, so she always had that more perspective on life. And I don't know, it was just very cool to have that person that was always supporting you. And she's still with us here, right? So,
George, I hate to put you on the spot again, but I'm going to. Uh-huh. What would Amanda be telling me if I was interviewing her?
If she would have the same mindset, mentality that I am right now. You know, I think she would be telling you that she went through hell and back multiple times, and that it made her the person that who she was today. You know, and she was strong-willed. I mean, she didn't let anything stop her. She graduated from San Francisco, USF or SFSU, one of the two. And she kept going with her dreams. Like, she didn't let any of this cancer limit her. So, you know, I know that's a very touchy subject, and it's one of those things that she inspires without physically being here on Earth. It's one of those things that in the cancer world, you're going to experience that. And I don't mean to flip the script either, but how have you become so strong with your father's diagnosis and his unfortunate passing? How have you been able to cope with your life?
Initially, I want to give you the answer that frustrates me the most when I'm working with my clients, but fascinates me the most when I'm working with clients, which is, I don't know. But the reason I say that, George, and I appreciate you flipping it actually, is because I've always been a motivated, quote unquote, motivated person. I was shorter, so I was an athlete that felt like I had a chip on my shoulder. And also watching my father struggle for his life he wanted physically, especially because he was a big time athlete growing up. I always felt like I was actually a surviving twin. And so I felt some guilt there. I was the, wow. the third trimester, you know, I survived, identical twin. My brother would have had my middle name, Mark. And I guess, you know, losing Mark, losing my father, sure, on paper, I say that gives me the spirit to work for the Cardinals one day, being learning disabled, getting a doctorate. But my fascination, George, and the perpetuation of what I'm doing and we're doing is because I don't think research studies, I don't think physical therapy, I don't think we just have this answer of this is what you need to do. Go read Brendan Burchard's book or go to a Tony Robbins seminar or go to a David Meyer seminar. I don't think it's those things. And I'm just so fascinated by it. And I think the only thing I can tell you, well, not the only thing I can tell you, because I could talk a lot these days with a podcast, but what comes to my mind the most is talking about these things authentically, vulnerably, and putting it out there. And it's not always things to what you said that we can verbalize. A lot of times that feeling I have, that willpower I have, which I didn't create. I don't feel like I created it. Like, I'm going to get up today and I'm going to go run and I'm going to go do my podcast and I'm going to go be a vegetarian and all. Like, I don't always know where it comes from, but I feel it and I listen to it and I embrace it. And it's scary at times. Sorry for the long-winded answer.
No, yeah.
I appreciate you playing host actually a little bit because, so yeah, that's how I feel about it.
David, yeah, no, this is something, what I mean by that fellowship in that community that we share, whether you are intrinsically or like, whether you're the patient or whether you're the person around that patient, you go through an experience that you never thought you'd go through. So that's why I feel like you and I are bonding, not over just sports, not over just physical therapy, but also a community that we never thought you'd enter, right? We never thought you would have.
Absolutely. And I think that's why the main element of whatever it is I'm doing is community-based, because I've had to decide between putting out digital courses on teaching people the George mentality that I that I write about without knowing you before, because I think, you know, the cue, you mentioned having that cue that I talk about, or the anchor,
yep,
when you are triggered in certain situations of what we call thought viruses. You had it innately, which tells me that we're going somewhere here together. And I know that the community piece is most important, because people, I can't do this without sharing the stories of others, and it becomes more convincing, compelling, and it's going to go in directions that I just can't imagine. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about the procedure they did that worked.
So yeah, through chemotherapy, I'm going to break it down from the protocol. I was initially scheduled to have 6 chemotherapy sessions. And they actually, as time went by, I was reacting well to the chemotherapy, but it wasn't enough to take it down yet. So I had to add a few more chemotherapy sessions after that. And these would be Thursday through Sunday, 24-hour sessions. So I believe 5 hours each day of infused chemotherapy. Through that, they took care of the bilateral metastasis in my lungs. So there's no surgery needed for my lungs, but they did need to remove a portion of the fibula along with the tumor on my left side. And then also the common peroneal nerve was wrapped around, like I said earlier, the tumor. So they had to remove that, which actually they did try a nerve transplant. So they grafted a nerve called the sural nerve, and they took that and they grafted it where the common peroneal nerve would be. So they did that within a few hours, very, very short time. They had to switch those to try and activate that nerve, innervate that nerve. And, you know, it didn't work, but I tried through physical therapy. The physical therapist tried so many modalities and exercises and ways to try and wake up that nerve, but it never happened. But anyway, what I'm trying to get at there with, I actually was introduced to my first AFO in the hospital. And through that chemotherapy and surgery, I actually had the option to do a stem cell transplant, which was research that they were doing to replace radiation. They used this to my advantage by taking my own stem cells. And instead of, you may hear of a bone marrow transplant where you need a donor, you need a match, right? They actually, through this, what they called autologous stem cell transplant, they didn't need to find a match. They didn't need to find a sibling, or they didn't need to find that match, right? So they took stem cells from me early on. They harvested, correct. They actually had, I had 2 Hickman ports, as they called it. So external ports where they infused chemotherapy, drew out blood. So on my right side, they actually had a port that it took about a whole week to infuse millions. I mean, I'm talking about millions of stem cells that was in a bag, maybe this big. Like it didn't look like a lot, but it was a lot of stem cells. And what they did was they harvested these through UCSD Medical Center, and they froze them. And then during my stem cell transplant, which was the chemotherapy session that I had to stay isolated in the hospital for 30 days, most of August, I'll never forget that. No visitors, my family only. And they pretty much brought me to my time zero. My ground zero. The chemotherapy beat me to the ground, and they actually described it very brutally. It almost killed me, right? They wiped out all the cancer that they could. And then what the stem cell transplant did, so we started with 7 days of chemotherapy, and then the stem cells were infused into me and proliferated all my other cells that were, stem cells can become any cell, right? So red blood cell, white blood cell. It's amazing that they found stem cells to be this miracle worker. And they infused it into me, and then I had to wait for time. It took about 20 days for me to feel like myself again. And it was just unbelievable, the experience I had. Thankful for media and the iPad and to FaceTime my friends, right? My family, to FaceTime my friends, right? Because I felt that was where I felt the most isolated, in a room by myself.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's surreal to hear you describe how they basically took you almost to the brink of death. And then and what comes to my mind is Western medicine comes in and basically is about to kill you. And then they take your own tissue, your own cells to heal you. Mm-hmm. And it's like that duality of like, I don't know why my head went here, but I'm also thinking about the self-talk of bad thoughts and good thoughts. Like the bad thoughts being the radiation and the chemo, and then the good thoughts coming in. It's like, well, you need the bad thought maybe to cue the good thought or the stem cells. Like good thoughts are almost like stem cells and they could spread, or good bacteria.
Yeah.
And it's just really it's phenomenal that we discovered, hey, we can heal you with your own cells. Where did they take your stem cells from? Where did they harvest them from?
They actually put a port up here.
They took it from that area too.
They did. Yeah. So I was, they were taking out blood, right? And they would harvest the blood and separate the stem cells from the rest of the blood and refilter the blood back into me. It was really a distinct process.
Yeah, that's not something that I know much about, because I think that's a pretty innovative thing I'm sure they're doing. So if we wanted to learn more about that process, what would we research or look up?
Stem cell transplantation. And they actually have good visuals out there that shows you what the, I'm blanking out on what the machine was called,
the chemo infusion.
So I had a Hickman port here, and then they had another external port on my right side just for stem cells.
Gotcha.
They wanted to separate the chemotherapy and blood draws from. So I had four wires sticking out of my chest at one point, which was really
wow.
I felt really, whenever somebody gave me a hug, I felt very on edge because it very uncomfortable. Yeah.
It's literally, for me hearing it, I almost, if I dramatized it, I don't know if that's a word, dramatized it. If I put it into a movie here, it's a superhero movie.
Some could say that, but also
I'm seeing, like, you know, it's of course speeding the process up in the movie, because we only have an hour and a half and you were going through a few years of it, but
yeah.
It's literally a superhero story.
Well, thank you. Yeah.
And you know, there's a tremendous sense of guilt for you being that. So it's like, which superhero is it that almost feels like it's like the superpower is almost too much for them?
You know,
I'm not a big Marvel person.
Me neither. You know,
okay, good.
You asked any of my friends
between you and I. I like
yeah.
it. I like it. People will hate that we're saying this, by the way. But
yeah, no, that's what I'm. Yeah.
But is that like the case? Like, you almost feels like I'm too strong for my own good, like, you know, to some degree, almost like.
I think from the outside looking in, some may think that because they haven't physically experienced what I went through. But also at the same time, I treat this like just a bump in the road that created my roadmap. I know I'm going to keep referring to your book, right? You talk about the roadmap that we create, and it's like,
this is your book today, George. I just wrote some words. We're anyway.
Yeah, no. But you know, I think of it as a situation that hopefully can inspire others, but also a situation that can be very touchy for some people and can be sometimes hard to hear, because it's like a coin flip. You either make it one way or the other. And I know friends, family members, what do you call that? 7 degrees of
separation,
right?
6 degrees of separation, I think.
Yeah, there's somebody. I think it's seven for some reason. I don't know. We can look that up.
I like seven better.
Seven. We were talking about that. Seven's one of your favorite numbers.
We'll go with seven. Even if it's six, we're going with seven.
Okay, yeah. But there's somebody that you know that's impacted that didn't make, in which they didn't survive through this situation. And it's one of those things that like it is Amanda. Touchy for me to bring up, right? Like your father.
Or an Amanda.
Oh, Amanda, correct. Yeah. And it's one of those things that I don't know which side of the coin to be on. Like, do I talk about how I survived this, or do I talk about the people that didn't make this through? And I think it's kind of like military, right? They serve our country, but not everybody makes it through.
Right.
You know, it's one of those things.
Veterans Day.
Uh-huh. It's a really, I love to, you asked me before this podcast, do you mind sharing your story? It's one of the things I love to tell my story, but at the same time, I don't want to overdo it with some of those things. It's a touchy subject sometimes.
I respect that. And I guess for me, I feel like it's my duty. And now I can kind of relate to people in the media when they're giving interviews and you're like, why are you asking that? Mm. It's a strange thing when you're speaking with somebody that has a really impactful story of any type. And there's almost this feeling of like, you want to kind of just explore your own curiosity there. But then at the same time, there's the vulnerability piece there where you're going outside of your own comfort zone. And you're like, you're feeling, well, maybe when I ask George this question, I'm going too far. But then there's this other part is like, well, why are you doing the damn show? You know, your job is to explore it. So I respect that. And I just to let you know, based on what we've talked about, it sounds like so far you've really told the full story and unbiased, and you're certainly not sugarcoating things. And, I commend your level of vulnerability. We both, I mean, seeing you get emotional earlier and through it, I feel it to a different degree, I'm sure, and I'm sure everybody out there, I mean, we're getting a lot of love for you here on Instagram, George, and people mm-hmm. are talking about you. I mean, like I said, it sounds like you were, people say a lot of times injured to elite or elite injured to elite or what it is. And I don't know. I'm just giving you my two cents. I know you don't like compliments. I could sense that, but I don't know. I'm getting a little of elite injured elite here from you. But anyway, I'm so happy that you decided to come on to the show. I know that you had a little podcast of your own with baseball back in the day, and I have tremendous respect for what you're doing. I want to take the conversation now beyond what we're talking about into your future. And because I think you're in like a super interesting phase 2 weeks prior to starting your doctor of physical therapy program at St. Augustine in San Marcos, in you're wearing the shirt there, which I love. I don't know if I've met, I mean, it's funny. You and I had a conversation yesterday and I was like, kind of, I think I was playing like a little bit of like bigger brother physical therapist. And I was kind of like telling you, George, hey man, listen, if you have a sports interest and you go to a PT program, you might feel, and a lot of my listeners are going to appreciate this, or our listeners, I should say, they kind of, I joke around, I call it the neutering of academia. Like they neuter you like, like a pet or a cat, like in the sense of you come in so green and excited and it's like your passion gets a little bit muted because of the amount of, they have to be brief with certain things and they have to be deep at the same time. So I was trying to prepare you for that. And at the same time, I was like, wait, why am I being so like, I shouldn't be negative. I shouldn't be putting, you know, I shouldn't be framing it for him. I should let him just experience it. But there's like almost this feeling of like, I just want you to be prepared for it. But I'm at the same time, I'm like, I think George is going to be just fine. Why am I being so sensitive to it? But like, I want you to share with the world how you feel right now. So when we do another show, whenever we could document it.
Yeah, no, of course. I am feeling very excited. And I think I started this journey a lot earlier than I thought. And what I mean by that is when I was introduced to physical therapy through having cancer and having drop foot, right? It's something that was significant in my journey was not just having cancer, right? But also having drop foot. That was a physical implication that I took as, at first I was like, why me, why me, why me? Why can't my ankle start lifting up? But then I took it as, okay, this is my tool to learn a little bit more about the body, right? And how I can empathize with people that have situations like this, opposed to just see it and then assume, okay, this is maybe good for that, right?
Right.
So it really introduced me to feeling certain types of imbalances and this and that. And I know I'm going on a little bit of a tangent here.
Oh,
but
I told you.
Yeah, you told me that.
Let's rant. Come on.
That's it. That's how ideas get out, right?
Yes.
So what happens?
Get written.
Right? Yeah. So with this experience, I was able to really dial in and be that open-minded skeptic. I know I always refer to your book. Open-minded, right?
Flattering me, George. Yeah,
I know. But
it's true. In this episode. All emotions. I love it.
With your book, I'm going to give you a little shout out. Injured to Elite. You should all read it. It is a great book about how to overcome injury and have David's perspective is very versatile in the sense of it can work for any situation, but he explains in a way that is not too direct. It's ambiguous to your interpretation, right? So I love the book. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'm going to use it almost as not to be dramatic, a Bible to kind of refer to every once in a while, right? So George. Everybody should read that book.
Oh, George. Yeah. Wow. I think you and I relate on another level of I am terrible with compliments, but I'm going to be present with it. I'm working on breaking through some habit loops here. So I'm going to bring some awareness to my discomfort there. And I'm just going to thank you for that. And I'm even going to tell people go to injuredtoelite.com/listen to get the first section of the book, because I want us to be role models for others to not be so apologetic and to take the compliment, because as you call it, fellowship and community and hearing this from our community is the most important thing. So thanks, brother. I appreciate
you. Of course.
You
anytime. You've made an impact in my life thus far. So thank you. That's why I wanted to mention that. But with my journey, I really found an interest being that 14-year-old in physical therapy with a goal, right? And the goal with physical therapy wasn't only through my internal want to be better, but the physical therapist also wanted the patient to be better, right? And that's the relationship and the collaboration between the physical therapist and the patient that I want to have. I've had inpatient physical therapy, outpatient physical therapy, strength and conditioning to try and get myself back on that baseball field and soccer field as well. I actually ended up playing soccer a little bit back on the field. They told me no football due to that lateral damage that can happen from a blow. Like if I got tackled, right? If that tibia broke, my leg would not be, it wouldn't do as well. So they tried to avoid contact sports with that situation, but it didn't stop me from playing the sports that I continue to love, which soccer at the time I loved. I still love soccer, actually. I still go play pick up with my friends, baseball as well. But what I'm trying to say out of this was I experienced so much physical therapy from the perspective of a patient that it made me think that I want to share my experiences and my two cents with the world by learning and picking up more tools. That's why I'm going to physical therapy school, because I want to start collecting those tools, right? Build up my toolkit so I can be more equipped to help patients from the clinician's point of view and be that support system for the patients. And it's not all about me helping that person. I don't take the credit for helping that person. I want to collaborate with that patients, right? To help them get to their goals. So it's a project that we do together in a way, whether that's inpatient, whether that's outpatient. I can go on and you can go on probably, you know, physical therapy there is.
There's, again, like I said at the very beginning, there's so much for us to talk about. And one of those things is just simply drop foot with what you experienced from the peroneal nerve damage.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had high-level football players, collegiate football players, with drop foot. One of my earlier cases during sports residency was a knee blowout, a lateral blow, a football player that unfortunately had severe damage to the common peroneal nerve and had drop foot, and he really still wanted to play. He was just starting to rise. And in and of itself, treating drop foot or working with people that are going through that mentally, especially, imagine what that's like, not just not being able to play football anymore, but dragging your foot around without the AFO, as you know. So I think bringing that into your clinical practice is going to give you, on top of being a physical therapist, like some insane insights. And there's a lot of work to be done there. You and I talk a lot about the mental side and how that's going to be a big piece that you're going to bring into it. But then even on the physiological side, all the elements of helping people that are going through that, because it's a really tough thing to come back from sport wise. And then on top of that, we didn't really talk too much about your baseball career, what baseball meant to you. Because I didn't want to take away from the main elements of your story. Putting this into a question form, I think I have two. The first thing is, let's first talk about the sports side, and then we'll wrap up asking you what you're going to take into your clinical practice, your mission going through this doctorate program, like some main elements, some core principles that you're going to use when you're a physical therapist. But first, let's talk about the sports and just let everybody know like what that's meant to you, baseball in particular.
Yeah. You know, I think a majority of the listeners that know me and follow me will say that I have an obsession with baseball, possibly. But and I mean that in all the good ways, because I love the game for what it is, whether I play it, whether I watch it. I had a podcast about it with my three college teammates, and it was baseball prior to cancer. I'm going to go back to pre-cancer and post-cancer, right? So pre-cancer, baseball was a game that I loved to play with my friends. It was something that I got excited for. I got the butterflies, the jitters from playing the game. And I know you know this, that opening day feeling, right? It just really makes you excited about the game. And I used to watch baseball, the Padres growing up. And then you take watching the Padres baseball, right? And then you implement it in your own playing styles, right? Then there comes a time where baseball is taken away from you. And it's hard to adapt to something you really, it's hard to adapt when something you really love is taken away from you. And baseball was one of those things that was taken away from me through cancer. And I like to think of it as I have a greater appreciation for baseball now, because I was able to rehabilitate myself. Not myself. I should reword that. I was able to rehabilitate with the therapist around me, the people around me, the mental side, right? And you know, the people around me, I have three friends. I have multiple friends that play baseball, but there's a core group of baseball teammates that I grew up with ever since I was in elementary school. And they helped me, not after the strength and conditioning from physical therapy and just my journey, they helped me get back on that baseball field by hitting me ground balls. They started hitting me pop-ups. They started throwing me BP, batting practice. They were there for me to help me get to where I wanted. So that support system really continued post-cancer, right? And it's one of those things that I had a deeper appreciation for the game as I layered it with physical therapy, strength and conditioning, rehabilitation. This really made it really special when I joined that club baseball team. I haven't played baseball since prior with post-cancer. So let me reroute that.
Sure.
I played from when I was in first grade to about seventh, eighth grade when I was diagnosed with cancer. I spent all my high school years rehabbing and strength and getting stronger and utilizing my AFO to learn how to walk again, to finally going to college at Cal State San Marcos University and joining their club baseball team. And I haven't played for that whole period of time. And when I made it on that roster and finally got on the field again, there's this, the butterflies and the jitters were amplified. It made me appreciate the game and that, like, I didn't think I could be back here, but look at this opportunity that the school has given me to continue playing on the club baseball team. I didn't care at that point. I still had the competitive mindset. I didn't care at that point whether I was playing on an athletics team or a club baseball team, I was just happy I was playing baseball again. And then for those that know me, I am the biggest Padre fan. So I still...
Well, hold on.
That didn't stop.
Hold on. Pause there. So yeah. I've been at two winter meetings in San Diego. First was my interview for the Cardinals. The second one was before leaving Los Angeles to relocate back to New York. Something that they do, I'm just randomly talking about that in San Diego, Petco Park. Question. What's your favorite food at Petco? I was going to save this for the end. I have other ones I want to keep there. So your favorite food, because I think they won a few awards for like the, I might be wrong, but they do this like food festival and fan fest food festival. And they we're getting cool comments, by the way, on Instagram right now. We get, apparently you're a pretty big Padres fan, which I gathered. I think I forget what won it.
I think it was the Seaside Tri-Tip.
He knows right away.
I think it was that something, they have a tri-tip sandwich there. But when I go, it's usually that or Phil's Barbecue. And, you know,
come on, I'm a vegetarian, yes. Man. I have no hope.
They have great sushi here in Southern California, San Diego. You can get sushi if you, I don't know, actually you don't eat fish.
I eat shrimp once in a while. That's about it, man.
All right. I recommend that Crunchyroll then.
Crunchyroll. All right. Yeah.
Shrimp Crunchyroll. That's one of my favorites too.
San Diego is a beautiful place. I will never forget when I interviewed for the Cardinals, my sports residency, I was completing, I was almost done with it. And I'm really serious when I describe it this way. I was living in New York pretty much my whole life. My first time on the West Coast, I'm flying into San Diego. Now, remember, I was in the sports residency in New York, like operating room on the field. As we're going through into San Diego, I don't know what it was, but I felt like the volume went from New York to like a million decibels to like 5 decibels. And it was this calming feeling as I walked out into San Diego. And like, I literally almost felt like I went into a time capsule. And that was when I knew I was going to live in California. I just picked the wrong city. I picked LA instead of San Diego. But anyway, San Diego is a special place, man. And I think maybe that's partly to blame for your amazing attitude. I mean, it's a good place to live. And you told me that one of your first jobs or one of your jobs was, working at a taco shop on the beach.
So there's a, for those of you that are familiar with the Encinitas green sign that is very popular in this area of North County, San Diego. I worked on a street called D Street, which, for those that may know, Moonlight Beach is right on that. It's in Southern California, North San Diego. But anyway, I worked at a taco shop there because my good friend Jacob Bear, he actually was working there for a while in high school. And I actually, Sports Authority went out of business. And I worked there for a few months as my first high school job. And then they went out of business, so I needed a job. As a high school kid, I wanted a job. So my friend said, hey, there's an opening at Raul's Taco Shop in Encinitas. And he presented me this opportunity. I'll never forget. I brought my resume. I wore a nice shirt and I walked into the taco shop, or I walked to the taco shop and met the owners, and they said, oh, you're George that Jacob was talking about. Come in. We'll start introducing you to everybody. And I started working that day. I'll never forget. It was the funniest thing. And that job has, I don't know, it meant a lot to me because I'm such a San Diego, born and raised. I want to make a living out here, right? Yeah. So a big influencer on why I wanted to go to school out here. And
we're getting some people on Instagram. I don't know if you know the person or not, but
that is my mother. Hi, mom. And my aunt.
Yep. I didn't want to speak quickly. I didn't want to say it. I love that mom is here. Hi, mom. You have a special son, as I don't have to tell you that, but all right. So I need some details though, man, because I think mom called you out and said you're a bit of a foodie. So,
oh man,
I want to know. Listen, I'm from New York, brother. Okay. I can talk food high. I was not always a vegetarian. Hi, Mom. And I want you to walk, like when I talk about a chicken parm hero, okay? Like I'm going to walk through the details. Is the sauce sweet? Is it, you know, more on the crispy side? I want to hear details on the tacos.
All right. The tacos, they are, oh my gosh.
Make people hungry. It's 1:30 on the EST. I don't know. It's like whatever, 3 hours earlier. So come on, make people's mouths water. Here's your chance. Yeah.
So a big part of food, right? And your senses, right? Is that smell.
Okay.
So you get that smell from the taco shop. It is, you have carne asada, you have pollo, you have, it's just the tortillas on the grill. You smell it all and then your mouth starts watering even before you order the food. And, you know, I'm just very thankful I was someone who was always active and worked out, because I, on my lunch break, would have a good amount of tacos and enjoy it while I was on my lunch break. But they made great food.
Shout out to Benny's in Los Angeles. So Benny's in Los Angeles is where my fiance Oli and I, we were frequent flyers. And my cousin who moved out, big Yankees fan. Mm-hmm. And he moved out to LA and he didn't have much of a diet. He was just used to Jersey guy. All he ate was mm-hmm. pizza. And he moved out to LA. And once he's living in LA, my cousin, man, this guy can't stop eating tacos, but our place that we grew to love was Benny's. That was like the weeknight spot over there in near Englewood. But oh my God, from the breakfast tacos, San Diego food culture downtown, like you just can't get that. In New York, by the way, San Diego might have great Mexican food, but in New York, especially where I'm in Queens, I'm in the most diverse place in the world. Literally, I think it's literally the most diverse place food wise, especially. And the Latin food here, Venezuelan, you know, Colombian, we got that. But Mexican food is similar to what pizza is here in New York. On the West Coast. So I'm having a moment right now. Even as a vegetarian, man, I could still have some good, especially like a breakfast burrito.
Oh yeah,
I'm working up my own appetite. All right, shut up, Dave. You're just
hey, indulgent. There are some options here, in at least in San Diego, they have now cactus. Right, I'm sure they've had that for a while. Actually, cactus tacos, nopal.
I don't know about that. I don't know about.
Oh,
that.
It's actually better than you think. Yeah, it's actually pretty good. I had a fast lunch.
A thorn stuck in your esophagus?
No, that would scare me if I saw a thorn sticking out of my taco. But no, none of that. And then now they have like sauteed mushroom and onion tacos. I know that sounds really
all day.
Odd, but they're pretty good. They're pretty good.
No, that's not odd. I put that on my eggs every morning. So, all right. What you said? You had a story, or did I hear that wrong? I think I heard wrong.
Oh no, I mean.
I'm getting hungry as we
go. You're getting hungry, right?
So you had that job. My first two jobs, by the way, bagel store, umpire.
Oh,
okay. Umpiring was a brutal experience. Getting yelled at by fans at 13, 14 years old. And I grew up a Mets fan. So I don't know if you can relate as a Padres fan, but I think even being in the baseball is a little self-deprecating. Like, you know, you sit through these long games, like you have to build thick skin in baseball. I think it's a requirement if you want longevity there. I wish a lot of the kids I know that play the game, I wish that they had your mentality though. So going into the field, what do you want to help share and do with the people you're going to work with?
You know, I want to bring a different light to that. And I know that's a very vague term, but I want to continue almost what I'm going to refer back to you again, what your mission is. I want to continue to build on top of that, having that mental aspect of physical therapy, because you don't realize that it's not all about getting big and strengthening as some people recall in the gym, right? It's about functional movement with a purpose, right? Whether that's you're a baseball player, whether that if you are, even in your occupation, right? If you are somebody that has to reach up And I know occupational therapists, this is more of their specialty. But in physical therapy, you have to build the strength to reach up above and place something on top of a loft or something. Just
That's going to be in your wheelhouse too, don't you worry.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to help that whole spectrum, right? And the spectrum can go on and on, right? Of how much you can help the field. But something that will stay true to every single part of that spectrum is the mentality and how you approach it and with the purpose that you approach it with, right? So my goal is to share a little bit of my light and experiences and actually have my experience help me with my toolkit to become a physical therapist.
Yeah.
And you know, for anybody that's getting into any field, I don't care if it's non-medical or medical or whatever it may be. I started earlier in my undergrad to get my feet wet a little bit by shadowing physical therapists. Mm-hmm. And really understanding, I don't want to say understanding yet, because that's what PT school is for and experience is for, but really observing what they do and how they go about their days, because I've learned so much just from observation. And I think I want to thank all the PTs and the people that were surrounding me throughout these clinics and inpatient facilities that helped me open up my eyes to what this field is really about. And I want to contribute to what they are doing and continue to pass that positive mindset to patients and the people around me. And there's something about this field that is so versatile in the sense of it's not too, obviously we are there to physically help patients and the people around us, but it's also a mindset that you have to implement into this therapy. So there's so much that I would love to collaborate with people, especially including yourself.
Thanks,
Jordan. In this field.
What's one, if you had to narrow it down to what you think just in your gut, in your inner voice, what's the one thing that you're going to really hone in on skill wise?
Having somebody believe in themselves. Well, like I want to help people that didn't have belief in themselves, believe in themselves. I know that's very wordy on the word belief, but like that is the true word right there, to believe in yourself. You know, I was listening to a podcast with you and Sean O'Neill. That, so I know we are physical therapists and we are also there as our occupation, right? I mean, when I say we, I got to break that down. I'm a student.
Yeah, you're not a physical therapist maybe, but you're part of the physical therapy profession. You are. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's my goal, right?
Even students not in PT school are part of the profession. Uh-huh. Patients are part of the profession. We're all, I think this goes into what you're talking about with fellowship. We're all part of this.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah, I agree. But what Sean O'Neill said was something that I found very fascinating. I know we are physical therapists, or no, I did it again, but physical therapists are in a position where they would like to have a career, right? But we're not in it they're not in it for the paycheck. I feel like a lot of physical therapists, they want to get the patients to the point where they don't need you anymore. In a sense, I loved what Sean said there. Get them to the point where they don't need you anymore as a therapist, right? You want to educate them well.
This is something that you had unique experience with, because you yourself, you certainly as heck didn't want to be in the hospital. You didn't want to be in that environment forever. A lot of us that go in the field, guilty as charged by myself, charged with being guilty of wanting to fix the person and wanting to have that responsibility. And also, it's tough at times to discharge and to let people on. And again, like there's like a, I'm going somewhere here, and it's taken us the right amount of time because this is a big topic, which is we all have a piece to the bigger puzzle here. Our ego can get in the way and say, I want to play Division I college baseball. I want to get a certain job. I want certain external results. But when we look at what you did, like, it's remarkable that you continued to play these games after going through what you went through physically. Like, that is just as remarkable. But conventionally, the fireworks are supposed to be in situations where you're playing the D1 ball or whatever it is. But what you did, I think we bring awareness to that should be celebrated at that same level. And as I was interviewing you, because of course, as a podcaster, you know, you want to curiously look into what others are doing and who do we look at when we want to know how we're doing. We look at the one and only, right? We look at the Joe Rogan Experience, and we watch and we see how Joe is interviewing. Mm-hmm. And he was interviewing an astronaut that worked for Elon Musk. And as I was watching that, I was really intrigued. I'm like, this guy, you know, he's an astronaut. Like, that's incredible. And we build that up in our minds. And then the last 20 minutes as you were speaking, for some reason, now I've interviewed some interesting people. I don't know if you know this, but DJ Mateo came on the show, who actually developed a flesh-eating bacterial infection.
Wow.
And lost his entire limb past his hip. And he actually did flatline, and he saw his son that was unbirthed at the time, didn't even know that his mother was pregnant. And so I've been connected to these unreal stories. But I guess kind of what I'm saying is, in many ways, like, you're the astronaut. And I don't know if we just tongue in cheek think about those things these days of, well, yeah, that's great, versus really taking a moment to feel, to your words, what you went through, empathize with you, take the moment of letting it be an hour and over 40 minute podcast, not caring.
Yeah.
Just being in the moment and allowing the growth to occur, not fighting things, and just genuinely connecting and not trying to find a silver lining in everything, and realizing that that's remarkable. Celebrating that.
Mm-hmm. We're all athletes of our own game. That's how I like to think about it. Our own game, it can mean the career you want to pursue, or it can physically mean the game of baseball that we love, right? We're all athletes, and we all go through challenges, and then we also go through great times, right? We're building our roadmap. We're building our roadmap, as you say.
You know, George, there's something that I've noticed about you that I think you possessed and that you possess. I watch documentaries, and you look at these videos of entrepreneurs before they went on to build their companies, and there's something that you see in them. You see a little bit of I don't know if it's not ignorance. It's not ignorance is bliss, but it's like it's a strange level of optimism. I saw it in my father at times. I see it in myself. There's a calmness to it. And you see them smiling, talking about, oh yeah, this is what I want to do. And you think back and you're like, wow, that wasn't profound. It was profound, but like, it was just simply like there was a peace with them and this optimism, and you know, and I see that in you.
And, thank you.
And I think back to our conversation about trying to be big brother with you a little bit and telling you, hey, it's not all rainbow sunshine and butterflies. But then I realize it is, because look at you. I mean, with what, like, and not just the cancer, like, just you as a person, like, you're cancer free. Like, we're talking to George right now, who's here, and there's a greater story here. I'm touched by that. And I feel like if you keep it, you're going to keep that. I mean, there's no question, but if we can even help others get there, what's going to be the next Tesla? What's going to be the next SpaceX? What's going to be the next Steve Jobs? What's going to be the next amazing athlete? I'm not even going to use a name because who knows, but
I don't know if there, I think you've mentioned this a lot actually throughout your podcast and just your philosophy on things. I don't think there is a perfect recipe or roadmap. You have to, I think to get where, I mean, like I said yesterday, on our phone call. I started injured. I was at my time zero. And I got another step closer to being where I want to be, eliteness. But I'm not even close to being there yet. I still have so much to do, so much to control on my mission. I have to be in control of what I'm doing, not just letting things happen, right?
Yeah.
Try and be as much control as I can. Assertiveness, as you were talking about yesterday in our phone call, right? You have to have control of your situation. And I learned that every single day too, because that is something that I need to strengthen. I need to be more assertive. I know you were talking about how I have a positive mindset and this and that, but I don't think without my dips and my valleys of going through the hard times, and I don't mean just cancer. I mean, just like mentally processing things, right? And mentally creating that game plan with doubt that was sometimes there. I was thinking to myself, how can I strive to become a physical therapist when I'm not physically perfect, as you can say, throughout my body with drop foot and having weaknesses here? But then I flipped that around and I said, okay, wait, why can't I strive to become a physical therapist with the physical tool that I always have on me, which is drop foot, right? To exemplify.
That's amazing. And you know, something that I've realized more recently is there's certain people that want to deny things or doubt the doubt. Doubting doubt is really just more doubt, mm-hmm. adding fuel to the fire. Why not use what you did right there? Curiosity. By the way, we've had listeners for an hour and 45 minutes on both YouTube and Instagram listening to us. You're a special human being. That's unbelievable. Doubting doubt, I don't think is the way. And it seems like you've embraced it and you were peaceful there, because when you doubt doubt, you just create more doubt and you create more anxiety. You create more worry. You create more stress around that. You're not in a good state of recovery, but instead you embraced it. You were at one with it. You're at peace with it. And you got through it and you grew through it. I love what you said. And I do want to kind of actually selfishly take that. We are all athletes of our own game.
Yep.
I think that embodies a lot of what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. We are all athletes of our own game. And in less words, in 10 minutes, I see a TED talk through this.
Yeah, no. It's that message that continues to be passed on by people. I mean, I've used that as kind of a perspective for me, at least. But I always believe thoughts and ideas come from something else. And what I mean by that, I know I'm bringing it internally to say that we are all athletes of our own game. But something had to influence me to create that mindset. And I think that's where bouncing ideas off each other, being in that fellowship, that community really amplifies everything, right?
Well, that sounds like a big part of the TED Talk that I would see, because you use the word soundboard, I think, with your parents specifically. And it's interesting how that has been really a way for you to strengthen it. And now going into being a clinician yourself, one of the things that you wanted to bring is that same belief that they had with you and that soundboarding. And I think it's one thing to say, yeah, we're encouraging or motivating our patient or our client, but it's another thing to truly feel it when you can't verbalize it. And I think that's the message I got. And whether this is a two-part episode or a one-part episode, we're going to share this.
Yeah.
You and I are going to do more of things together with Injured to Elite, the network, and our fellowship and community. And I want to really tell you how proud I am, even though I never met you in person and I've only spoken with you probably what, like 4 to 5 times, but in length every time. I truly am proud of you, because I feel what you've gone through to some degree, and it's a remarkable journey in all ways. It seems like your whole life has been remarkable and what you're embarking on is remarkable. And I don't say this too often and truly feel it to this degree. I'm like really excited to see what it is that comes, not pressure. I'm not saying that, but like, yeah. I'm really excited to just hear what you do and see it and be a fly on the wall and see how you impact people, because I've been so impacted by you. And so I'm excited for that, and I'm excited for you. So thanks for being so vulnerable on this podcast today and being willing to talk about things like your friend Amanda and everything we've spoken about with your own trials and tribulations physically, and keep killing it, man.
Well, thank you. I mean, I think a huge part of who I am today goes to people like you, goes to the people that I shadow at G3 Physical Therapy, goes to the people at Palomar Medical Center that I've shadowed, goes to people outside the medical center to make me who I am. I always say this, well, actually, I don't say this. I think to myself that working at a physical therapy clinic not only taught me about physical therapy, but it also taught me how to be a good person, how to talk to people, how to organize my thoughts in a way that I feel structure when I go to work every day. And I'm excited to go to work every day. I'm actually entering my last full week at the clinic, and I've never felt so. I can say this about another job too. I worked at the gym and athletics with Cal State San Marcos, and that was another job that leaving that job, it felt like you had so much experience there. And what I mean by experience is memories and opportunity. Okay, this way, yeah. Sometimes my Instagram, my phone's
Instagram, on. Yeah, that's all right. As long as you can hear on Instagram, we're good.
Okay, cool.
People worry too much about editing. Don't let ever that get in the way of the story. I just want to keep going.
Yeah, no, definitely. But something special about being an aide and having sitting in the backseat of a car. What I mean by that is watching the physical therapist interact with the patient, and for the physical therapist to even build trust in us aides to work with their patients and to have that hands-on experience was so crucial for myself and my self-growth, that when you say thank you for your positive optimism and this, I think I gained that through others. And I can't say I pulled that just out of myself, my own feelings. It had to definitely be being surrounded by the right people, whether it's virtually like you and me, or whether it's in person, right through my experiences and my memories, my opportunities that I've had through school, we can go on and on about the opportunities that molded me. And I'm still not even there yet, right? We're all clay, right? We just have to be molded to who we want to be. I was going to say, it's very easy for us to be put in the wrong hands and be influenced by the wrong things. Mm-hmm. But if you kind of block those things out, and surround yourself with the good, you become a product of your, that's where another topic comes in. I definitely think I am a product of my genetics, but I also think I'm a product of my environment too. So I think it's split. I think that conversation is very interesting. And I know people can go on and on about whether you're a product of your environment or a product of your DNA.
Well, George, I think one of the take homes is, yes, we are teaching others mental skills to deal with situations, but maybe we can do more teaching the people that are around those with challenges, or professionals or clinicians, and we can focus on equipping them with the abilities to help those around them. So I think that can be a major focus in a really a big point that you and I spread, because of course, if we're just telling people to go turn to those others, then we should probably focus on those others as well to provide that support. So I learned that through this podcast today, or these two episodes.
Okay.
So yeah, I love it. And thank you so much for, again, being so thorough and comprehensive with all the things we talked about. And I look forward, again, like I said, to hearing your voice grow. And I think you actually are quite assertive. I think you don't have to feel like you need to apologize for having your voice. And in PT school, certainly not. I think the professors should be humble as humble as you are with how you speak about these things. So thank you so much. And go Padres, right?
Go Padres. Thank you, David. And I'll give you guys credit as Mets. You guys are actually, I think you guys are in the lead right now.
Or yeah, don't give us too much credit. Listen, you don't tell a Met fan, you don't give a Met fan credit in April. We're not even in May. You don't give a Met fan credit that early. All right. You give them credit in the playoffs. Okay. Because I've seen it all.
But yeah.
Thank you for that. DeGrom is unbelievable. Oh my gosh. Pitchers these days, thank God I didn't play baseball. I'm not growing up right now because I think I might have just been like, all right, this is ridiculous. Like, it's unbelievable how good they are. Better than even when I was working for the Cardinals 5 years ago. These arms are just insane. That's another show.
Hey, I don't mean to create another philosophical meaning to that, but just like the world of rehabilitation, the world, anything, right? It's evolving. The game is evolving. Hopefully we can evolve with this field, right? So it's really interesting that you brought that up. It's great. And I thank you so much for having me on your podcast and welcoming me to your community, Injured to Elite. It's been an honor, and it continues to be an honor for me to be part of this network.
An honor to have you as part of the family, George.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks everybody that's listened live, especially on Instagram. I know, George, you've had some friends and family and mom and everybody. And I don't know if we've had an episode like that yet. So that was an awesome first. So thanks everybody for tuning in live. And we'll put this up probably two different weeks, episode part one and part two. And thanks everybody on YouTube that listened. Everybody that hasn't subscribed yet, subscribe to the channel, Injured to Elite, Injured to Elite Podcast on Apple, on Spotify, on whatever, injuredtoelite.com. Check out the book, check out the podcast, and you can join George and I and about 22 others, the Injured to Elite community, which you can learn more about on the website as well. So I hope everybody has an amazing rest of your day. Take in some of the points we spoke of today that George shared with community and fellowship, and maybe you're that person for somebody else, and maybe you are finding somebody else to help you if you're going through a down time, and it's just about sharing all of that. So take it into your day today and have a taco, because I'm going to definitely be eating some tacos over the next few days somewhere in Queens.
Sounds good. Thank you, David.
Thank you, George. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Okay, everybody, you made it. You got hopefully as much as I did out of this episode from such an amazing human being who himself feels like he gained so much from cancer, which is amazing to think that we're taking from cancer and providing a framework to help people in all parts of their lives. It doesn't take away from what cancer takes away from others. It certainly can be devastating, and I don't want to belittle that, but in certain times, maybe we can also pay it forward, like in this situation. I know that I am going to be leaning on my own family and my support network and my community more and more as I continue on my journey, developing this podcast, developing my network. So if you want to follow me and George, follow George on Instagram at GeorgeTerris6, GeorgeTerris6. And you can follow me on Instagram at Dave M. Meyer, DaveMMeyer. And if you want to join us in our community where we are helping each other go from injured to elite, and those that we work with go from injured to elite, head over to injuredtoelite.com/network. Thanks everybody for listening, and please share this with somebody that you think will be inspired. Have a great day.